This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. A new report finds that households in the United States are paying 25% more for groceries than they did before the pandemic. That's more than what we've seen with general inflation. Our next guest dug into the numbers to uncover the root causes of why food prices have stayed high even as inflation has cooled down. She joins us now to share the findings, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Has the cost of groceries been a concern for you and your family? Are there particular items you've noticed going up and maybe staying up? Have you made changes to the kinds of meals you eat, the brands you buy to make your food budget work? Do you receive food assistance like SNAP or WIC? If so, has that been enough to keep up with the cost of groceries where you live? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Elizabeth Pancotti is strategic advisor for Groundwork Collaborative, where she co-wrote two recent reports looking at corporate profits during inflation and the rise in grocery prices. Liz, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
I think a lot of us have felt the pinch when we're shopping, noticed particular items we regularly buy going up. When you take a broader look at groceries in general, what are some of the key things we're seeing?
So we find that since the start of the pandemic, since the end of 2019, grocery prices overall are up 25%. And as you mentioned before, that is more than overall inflation, which is up 19%. So I think also just given the regularity of grocery prices, you know, most folks are going once, if not more than once a week, people really feel the increase in grocery prices more so than maybe a used car, which you certainly don't purchase every week and may not have even purchased one since the onset of the pandemic. We're certainly noticing that some items are rising faster than others. I think, you know, a year or two ago, folks really pointed to eggs. Those actually have come down a significant amount, almost 25% since last year. And, you know, milk and other kind of staple items are down. But we find that five items drove nearly 30% of grocery inflation over that time period. So beef, poultry, juice and other kind of non-carbonated beverages, fresh produce and snacks, which I think that for a lot of people that makes up kind of the bulk of their cart. But people I think are really still feeling those price increases at the grocery store, even though the growth in those prices has slowed over the last year.
Before we dig into the causes of those prices, I want to talk a little bit about the consequences. Now, for somebody at the top end of the income scale, increase in grocery prices, they may not feel it so much. What kind of impact is this having, especially at the lower end, though, of the income scale?
Yeah, it's a really good point. The burden of these higher grocery prices is certainly not borne equally across the income spectrum. So we find that folks in the bottom 20% spend about a quarter of their income on groceries, where those in the top 20% actually spend less than 5% of their income. So we find a much larger impact, obviously, at the bottom. Specifically at the bottom, though, folks at the very bottom are going to receive food assistance or SNAP. Those benefits have increased a lot since the start of the pandemic as a result of some reforms that the Biden administration has made. And so we actually find that on average, the typical family that relies on SNAP has seen their benefits increase at more than double the rate of grocery price inflation. The problem with that, though, is that only about 15% of Americans qualify for those benefits. And so if you fall into kind of the missing middle of folks who are lower income, but not so low income they qualify for benefits, you are really feeling the squeeze at the checkout counter.
Talking to Liz Pancotti, strategic advisor for Groundwork Collaborative, co-author there of two reports on inflation, the causes of inflation, and especially the price we pay for our groceries. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Liz, the big question is, what is driving these costs? I think the sense during the pandemic and shortly after was supply chain stuff, and that was there, a cost of labor, things like that. What are we seeing now as the grocery food costs seem to be persisting a little higher than inflation in general?
Yeah, so we find a couple of things. One, you're absolutely right that those supply chain snarls were certainly present kind of as we emerged from the pandemic and as folks, you know, bought a lot more groceries there when we were all staying at home. Since then, we found a number of climate-related factors have really affected the supply of kind of key grocery items. So droughts in some places and more rainfall in others have kind of affected meat and sugar and fertilizer markets. The Ukraine-Russia war has also driven up prices for products that those two countries supply to the rest of the world, like oil and wheat and fertilizer that kind of lets all the other stuff grow. And so those shocks, some of them have were temporary or acute, and some have really persisted. In addition to that, we've noticed that even as those shocks have sort of moderated and supply is back at kind of a normal level, companies are still keeping those sticker prices high, even though their input costs have come down. And so we find that in a number of industries, those companies are bragging that their margins are expanding as their costs come down. And though they're not hiking prices anymore, they are leaving prices at those much higher levels, meaning that American families are really subsidizing those companies when they check out at the grocery store.
And that, I know that had been floated as a notion over the last couple of years. Some people call it greedflation, but it can be hard to tease out what different factors are leading to particular reasons for price increases. What can you point to say, yeah, this greedflation, this idea that companies have learned that, hey, we're willing to pay more for stuff, so they're going to keep charging more for stuff even as their costs go down. How do we figure out if that's really the factor?
Yeah, so we have another paper, as you mentioned, that we released, I guess, about 2 weeks ago now, where we find that in the most recent quarters that we have data available for, so the second and third quarters of last year, that the percent of price growth that was driven by, you know, labor costs, which have obviously gone up since the pandemic, non-labor costs, which are kind of those inputs like, you know, raw materials and transportation and whatnot, and then corporate profits, we find that corporate profits are driving more than half of that inflation now that those supply chain snarls have really come down. And we noticed this, you know, we kind of dug into the earnings calls of a lot of these companies. So in the grocery market, in particular, snacks is a really great example. You know, if you're buying chips or Oreos lately, you might have noticed a pretty high increase in those. And we find that those profit margins are up double digits. In fact, for Mondelez International, who makes Oreos, Wheat Thins, and Ritz crackers, we noticed that over a one-year period, their profit margins increased by 75%. And so we do find kind of in the aggregate evidence of that corporate profiteering, but when we dive into particular industries, it's really apparent.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Randy is with us in Saner. Hi, Randy. What did you want to tell us about, Randy?
We have a family of four. I have a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old. And I used to buy organic, wanting to make sure they have, like, good, healthy food. But it was just becoming too expensive with all the bills as well. So we've just gone back to, like, regular items. School lunches consist mostly of peanut butter and jellies and lots of leftover dinners. So we're definitely trying to, you know, budget our weekly shopping trips to like $150 or less.
Randy, thanks a lot for sharing that. Liz, Randy and her family not alone. What do we know about how families like Randy's have adjusted to these higher costs of food?
Yeah, it's something that, you know, my household of two is feeling, and I can't imagine a household of four more feeling the squeeze there. My household of two tries to stick to that grocery budget, and it's really difficult, you know, in high-cost areas and across the country. I think to her point about, you know, organic shopping, going back to conventional is one that we are seeing evidence of companies really pointing to a decline in demand for those products just because of prices. A lot of that is just, you know, that those products are more expensive to make and grow. But a lot of it is just prices up on the whole. And so I think her experience is not an unfamiliar one for American families right now.
Randy, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Liz, another factor you point to in your reports, and this is maybe part of why companies can keep prices up even after their costs go down, is industry concentration. In so many industries in the food world, there might be two, three, or four companies selling groceries in an area, processing meat, you name it, the list goes on and on. How big a factor is this?
It's a huge factor. I think meat is one that most people point to and can kind of even tell on their own aisles at their grocery store. Four companies control between 55 and 85% of the market for beef, poultry, and pork. And we've seen a number of mergers over the last kind of 5 to 10 years in those particular industries that have further consolidated this. This not only raises prices for American consumers at the grocery store, but it really does squeeze the farmers and ranchers that grow and produce that meat. And so I think we're really seeing these big players squeeze, families and small businesses and farmers and ranchers, certainly in Wisconsin. It's a really unfortunate factor. And because they're so large, they have so much power to hike prices because families really have no cheaper competitor to turn to. We noticed this also kind of in the retailer in the actual retailers who are selling this food. And in fact, folks have probably seen in the news a large grocery merger deal between Kroger and Albertsons announced about a year ago, which, if approved by regulators, would really kind of supercharge the consolidation in the grocery retailer industry. And so I think folks are anxiously awaiting the response from the Federal Trade Commission on that particular merger.
Elizabeth Pancotti is an economic policy expert, co-author of a new report from Groundwork Collaborative about inflation and grocery prices. She's with us for a look at what's hot behind higher grocery bills and what policymakers can do about it. We'll get into that in just a few. You could join in at 800-642-1234. As a grocery shopper, what kind of things have you seen a sticker shock for over the last couple of years? Have you seen some things go back down? And if you work in the food industry supply chain, from farming to stocking those store shelves, love to hear your observations as well. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with economic policy researcher Elizabeth Pancotti about why food prices have stayed pretty high, along with some policy fixes aimed at reining them in. You could join in at 800-642-1234. How's the cost of food affected you and your household? Are there policy changes you would like to see? Do you have questions for our guest about her reports on these issues? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Daryl is with us in Menominee Falls. Daryl, hi.
Yeah, my question is if your guest, your association has knowledge of these horrendous profits that these companies are taking in, what are government oversight measures in being enforced, or if there are any at all? Why are they just allowed to do this without any ramifications?
Daryl, thanks for the call. Liz, you've looked at least some government statements about accusations of price gouging in food. What kind of things are out there?
Yeah, it's a great question. So one, I'll say that, there have been some recent actions taken by the Biden administration to kind of target this price gouging. And so recently there was a price gouging case of chicken meat packers raising prices actually before the pandemic. So a lot of this stuff just unfortunately happens on a lag. More recently, I think the Biden administration has realized that companies really are taking advantage of American families, and we've got to do something about that. And so you can kind of see that in some of their more recent work on junk fees, for example, kind of outside the grocery space, but, at auto dealers or bank overdraft fees, they really are tackling these places where companies just rip off consumers. In addition, I think, the Biden administration has really targeted competition in the agriculture and food markets. And so one of those ways is in October of 2022, the U.S. Department of Agriculture proposed regulations to kind of rein in deceptive practices and outsized anti-competitive factors in the livestock and meat processing markets that weaken competition. And so those rules, when finalized, would significantly improve the industry for farmers, ranchers, and consumers. Outside of the U.S., you know, you've seen other countries with maybe more authorities on the books really take this on. So, for example, in Canada, Prime Minister Trudeau told grocery retailers that they must come up with a plan to lower prices for Canadian consumers or their corporate tax rate could go up. In Europe, we've seen actually a large grocery retail chain say to Pepsi, we're no longer carrying your products because you've decided your prices can skyrocket so much and we don't think it's fair for consumers or for the retailer's bottom line. I think you might start to see, you know, kind of more action and more public comments from the president on this particular issue. There was a great New York Times article about this over the weekend where the administration is really taking on kind of public shaming of these companies. But beyond that, there are more limited authorities to, you know, price controls or kind of corporate profit caps like some other countries have. And so there are fewer resources, but I think the Biden administration is exploring all of their options.
Thanks for that call, Daryl. Barb joins us now in Madison. Barb, hi.
Hi. I'm wondering if there is a list somewhere of these quote-unquote greed companies, because I'd actually boycott them.
Barb, thanks for the call. I mean, can we name names that specifically, Liz, that some companies are keeping prices up and making more profits than other competitors?
It's a great point. We actually, at the Groundwork Collaborative, put out a little chart with about 10 of them to show their profit margin increases. And in the full paper, which you can find at groundworkcollaborative.org, we've got quotes from about a dozen different companies' earnings calls where they are bragging about these outsized margins. So it's definitely out there on the internet. And I don't know that we made a boycott list, but you could pull something together.
Thanks for that call, Barb, at 800-642-1234. The tricky thing for Barb, though, Liz, is if there are only, you know, 2 through 4 ultimate providers of a particular line of products, and, you know, maybe they have sub-brand names along the way, and 2 through 4 of those companies are bumping up their prices, you can't really boycott them, right? Because you're just going to their competitors doing the same thing.
It's true. So we actually, in our corporate profiteering paper, we point to the diaper industry, which, you know, I'm not sure parents can boycott diapers. So it's a good consideration. But we find that there are actually two companies, Procter & Gamble and Kimberly-Clark, that control 70% of the U.S. diaper market. So Huggies, Pampers, you name it, they're all made by the same two companies. Diaper prices have increased by more than 30% since 2019, going up about $6 a pack. Those two companies have seen their costs for wood pulp, which is the kind of absorbent factor in a diaper, go down by 25% last year, and yet diaper prices haven't come down at all. In fact, these companies are bragging about windfall profits on their earnings calls. And so I'm not sure that you can boycott diapers because, as you said, there's only two competitors, both their prices are high, and not putting your toddler in diapers probably isn't an option for most parents.
Thanks again for that call. Talking to Liz Pancotti, economic policy researcher at the Groundwork Collaborative, looking at inflation, especially when it comes to food prices. Still time for you to join in with your questions or experiences at 800-642-1234. I got a caller who couldn't stay on the line, bringing up another fact here. Tom from Bangkok says, everything that we buy in this country is hauled by trucks, which run on diesel fuel. I think the high cost of diesel fuel is driving a lot of the inflation we're seeing. That is another factor you looked at, Liz, transportation in general. I know there were points in the pandemic or post-pandemic where that was a big factor. How much do you see that playing into food costs?
Yeah, it was definitely a factor when gas and specifically diesel prices were much higher. Those have come down pretty significantly over the past year, though I think there are some concerns about shipping costs going back up, given kind of recent disruption in the Panama and Suez canals, which some folks may have heard about. So I think there, you know, there really are these ebbs and flows. And the big takeaway I think we got from the food report was our supply chains are just, they really lack resiliency. And so the tiniest shock reverberates throughout the entire supply chain, really affecting the price that consumers pay at the grocery store.
I want to look to the future a little bit, Liz. Now, to pick a product I rely on, a breakfast cereal, there's different brands. Prices went up. They've dipped a little. At some point in a market, if the cost went down, a competitive market, Company A would start lowering their price to lure Rob's business over to them, and Company B would have to follow up, and those prices would start settling down. Do we expect to see something like that happening, not just in cereal, but other foods as well?
It's a good question. I would love for my Honey Nut Cheerios to cost a little bit less, though I find the store brand doesn't taste as good. But it's a really good question. And actually, what we've seen over the past few years is the opposite. Because there's so little competition in these markets, you know, Company A sees that Company B is going to keep their prices high. It gives them an excuse to keep their prices high. And because customers really like their breakfast cereals or whatever they're buying at the grocery store, they can keep those prices high. And they're still competitive with their competitors, and people will still buy them. And so, you know, I think those volume dips in sales have not really realized for these companies. And as a result, they have no incentive to lower their prices to a competitive level. I agree with you that in a perfect market, you know, what we're taught in Econ 101, that's what should be happening. But unfortunately, I think these companies are kind of what some economists have dubbed tacitly colluding, or knowing that one company is going to keep them high and it gives them an excuse to keep theirs high as well.
Just briefly, Liz, on the politics of this, you mentioned some action from the Biden administration. This is a huge constituency, presumably everybody eats. Do you see a lot of alarm and action from the political world to tackle this issue?
Yeah, so actually, I just saw this morning that Senator Baldwin retweeted an article about our report. So I definitely think that local policymakers in Wisconsin and across the country, the Biden administration and others, are paying attention to this. It is a hard issue. There is not a magic wand to wave to bring prices down at Kroger or Walmart overnight. It really requires a harder look at the resiliency of our supply chains, the competition in our markets, and ultimately kind of this corporate profiteering that unfortunately our regulatory and tax policies really enable and in some cases incentivize. And so while I think when we set out to write this report, we hoped we would be able to find the crux of these price increases, it's such a pervasive issue, from climate factors to increased transportation costs to, you know, global economic conditions, the whole thing. All of this is so interwoven that policymakers unfortunately don't have a magic fix for this. But I think it is something they know and are paying attention to.
Thanks to our guest, Elizabeth Pancotti, economic policy researcher, strategic advisor at the Groundwork Collaborative, with us to talk about why grocery costs have stayed high even as inflation cools. This is Central Time.